Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, an attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson. I'm in studio here with Thomas Sparks, Cody Beeson, Martin Felix, and Kylie McLeod. We got quite a crowd here today. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I had an interesting experience the last week. It was Memorial Day weekend, and I wanted to hit the lake a little bit early before the crowds got out there because the river and the lake can get pretty crazy on Memorial Day. And I've got kids that I generally tow behind my boat on tubes and wakeboards and surf and whatnot. So we went out there early Friday. I would say we got there around 2 o'clock, and I pull into Senator's Wash. Senator's Wash, if you had been there 10 years ago, it used to have trees in the parking lot. It used to have painted parking lines where you would know your designated parking spots. It even had a handicap marked parking spot. Now, they stopped watering the trees. They stopped maintaining the parking lot. This is, I think it started at COVID that they stopped doing any type of maintenance whatsoever. And so all the trees died. There's no lines where to park. So everybody's, you know, parking cattywampus, which is my new favorite word, cattywampus. Mm-hmm. Use it. That's the word of the day.
I'm going to add it to the dictionary, yeah.
Cattywampus. And so it's very inefficient. And the boat ramps are breaking apart. The trees are growing over the top of the boat ramp. And they're mesquite native trees that have these thorns the size of your thumb. And so you get a back down through those. Anyway, that's not why I'm telling this story. The reason I'm telling this story is because they charge a fee to park in that lot in order to use the ramp and to park there. It's federal land. It's a national park. So you have to pay a fee there. And I pulled in. I had an annual pass. I don't check my annual pass each time I go out there. So I went out, and before I stopped my vehicle, a ranger pulls up to me and asks, can I see your annual pass? Now, normally what you do is you launch your boat, you pull up, park your vehicle, put it in your windshield. They'll come over. If it's current, great. If it's not, they'll give you a ticket or a warning if they're being nice. In this case, I'm literally on the boat ramp, like mid turning my vehicle around on the boat ramp. So it's in a very awkward position. And, you know, ranger comes down. It's like, I got to see your pass. Haven't parked the vehicle yet. So I show him the pass and he looks at it. And as I'm passing it over to him, I notice it's expired. He notices it's expired. And I'm like, oh, it's expired. I'm going to go have to buy a new one. He goes, okay, go buy a new one at the park facility over on the Mesa. And I said, okay, but there's a trailer park here for the manager of this ramp, and she sells passes. And he says, yeah, but you know, don't do that. Go over to the main Mesa and buy a pass. And I questioned it a couple of times. He wasn't budging. He was more insistent. And so I was like, okay, do that. It's not worth it. So I went over, there's this full-time facility that sells passes and makes sure that people are being compliant with the park regulations. And so I said, yeah, I'd like an annual pass. And the lady says, okay, that'll be $75. So I pull out my wallet and I go to hand her a credit card, and she laughs. She's like, You can't be serious, right? I was like, well, I have a credit card. I've got Apple Pay. I've got Venmo. She's like, no, we need your checkbook. And I'm like, yeah, I haven't carried a checkbook for 15 years. I don't know. It's been a long time. I haven't carried cash since, you know, McDonald's started accepting credit cards.
Yep.
That was 20 years ago. So
dangerous.
Yeah. And so I'm like, yeah, no, I don't have a checkbook. And so we're scrounging around. Anybody got cash? You can do $10 for a day or $75 a year. And I got a bunch of two teenagers and then 10-year-olds and 8-year-olds in my car. No, they don't have any cash. So I'm like, okay, I don't know what to do. She's like, well, if you're military, you can go over to YPG and you can use their ATM machine. And I said, yeah, I'm not military. She goes, yeah, because their ATM machine, you go down this road, you go in here, and she keeps explaining to it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm
not military.
Thank you for the information.
I can't change
that status.
That status. This is not an option. And then she's like, well, you could go down to Hidden Shores. And I'm like, but you have to pay to get into Hidden Shores. She's like, yes. And then you could use your debit card. I'm like, I have a credit card. And she's like, then you could use your debit card, but you have to buy something there. And she goes to explain this. Again, an option that's not available to me that I'm trying to help her understand up front. Neither of these are options. She's like, well, you could drop your boat and you could go into town and to the fishing and game, and you could buy the pass there. And that's only an hour and a half round trip, you know, no big deal.
Right.
Trying to get out on the lake early before the crazies get out there. And so I'm like, okay, communication is not bilateral at this point, right? So
it's going straight over her head.
Yeah, yeah. Everything that I'm saying is falling on deaf ears. And so I said, okay, I'll figure something out. Thank you. Appreciate the help. And so I get back in my van, and my buddy's out there. I can see his boat out on the lake. And it's a chance that he might answer his phone while he's out on his boat. Call him up. He does. He answers his phone. Actually, his son answers his phone. And I said, hey, guys, we don't have an up-to-date pass. I don't have 10 bucks. Can I borrow 10 bucks? And they said, yeah. We'll drop so-and-so off. He'll run up the ramp and unlock the truck, and we'll get you 10 bucks. Great. So I drive back over to Senator's Wash. Before I get into the parking lot, this ranger comes ripping around the corner, heads me off, blue lights flashing, and I'm like, thank heavens that he's about to tell me about this axe murderer that's out there. Yeah. So we don't get out of our van.
Right.
Because this is an emergency, and he's here to protect us from this catastrophic danger that is about to befall us. And so he's not getting out at first. I'm just in my van, so I kind of like inch my van forward a little bit, and then he jumps out, and he's like, stop! I was like, okay.
I will do that.
And so he doesn't pull behind my van. He like pulls in front of my van, so I can't get all the way into the parking lot.
Oh, okay. We're talking about the detainment, okay?
Yes. And so yes, I've got 6 kids in the car, and they're like, "Wow, something's exciting about to happen, right? Yeah. You know, there's a bomb threat going on, or you know, some terrorist activities happening here. Like, what are we going to learn about?"
Yeah, take your phones out, everybody.
And he's like, "You need to have a pass." And I said, yes, yeah, I get that. I'm going to buy one here. And he goes, well, let me see your checkbook. And I said, no, I don't have a checkbook. He goes, who comes out here without a checkbook, without a method to pay? And I try to explain to him, you know, about the history of checkbooks and how they've kind of gone the way of the dodo bird. I go, nobody requires checks anymore except the federal government. And this is... I get BLM runs this land, you know, this is state or federal park, but I have a credit card. I do have a method to pay. He goes, you have to have a pass to come out here. You can't come out here without a way to pay. And I'm trying to explain my whole arrangement with my friend loaning me $10, but he's really hounded me on not having this checkbook. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, It's the 21st century. I got lots of methods to pay. Money can be transferred here. It's just the federal government hasn't caught up. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be difficult here, but I'm not some vagrant trying to suck off the, you know, charity of your park service here. And
funded by taxpayers. We might add.
Exactly. So, and we'll get into that later in the show here. So the checkbook conversation goes much longer than necessary. I say, nobody requires it except, you know, federal government. And he goes, that's not true. And I'm like, okay, who requires checkbooks? Just like, You know, that's my natural response. I shouldn't have. I should have just left it at that.
Left.
I should
there you go.
Should have left good enough alone.
Yeah.
I couldn't, but I was like, who?
Quickly.
Yeah.
So he's like, Lake Mead, that's a state park.
Oh, yeah, right.
Thank you, Einstein.
I'm like, I will give it to you. State and national parks both require checkbooks. Although that's not true. Lake Mead does accept credit cards.
He was just wrong.
Yeah, because I go to Lake Mead quite a bit, actually, and their system's actually pretty efficient. But I'm like, okay, non-governmental entity. Anyhow, he wasn't persuaded that I was in the right. So I said, well, here's the situation. I'm going to pay for a pass. You guys sell passes here. I can see the booth right there. It's a metal box. It's got envelopes on it. It's got a pin that I guarantee doesn't work, but I've got one on my car. I'm going to fill that out, and will that work? I mean, is that going to avoid this catastrophe that we've got pending? And he's like, oh, that's your story, huh?
Yeah.
And I said, I look around. I'm driving a 12-passenger white van, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm pulling a 2007 boat. And I've got 6 kids in the van. And I go, what about this setup screams to you nefarious criminal activity? I understand you guys are trained specially to see nuances that are going on to catch the bad guys before some serious calamity occurs. But what is it? I'm curious. Where are the red flags popping up to you that I'm about to engage in some criminal activity? And he's like, why are you being so difficult? And I'm like, I'm trying to buy a pass. He goes, but you don't have money. And I'm like, there's a kid that is a friend of mine. He's walking up the ramp right now. He's about to lend me $10 so I can buy the pass that is sitting 10 feet away from us. Can I do that? And he's like, that's your story. Well, I've received a report from a lady that she ordered you to drop your trailer and go back in town and buy a pass. I'm like, she suggested that was an option, and I found a different option. But I'm not used to taking orders from a retired individual that's her job to have free rent in a camp and then manage your pass system. And she goes, oh, now you're an ageist, huh?
An ageist.
I was like, that is the first time. I've been called a lot of things.
Yeah, an ageist.
But now I'm an ageist.
Got it.
I'm an elder law attorney. My whole life is made off of helping generally people who are in the latter years of life, retired. I love people that are retired. But apparently I'm an ageist in this situation. And I say, ageist? How so? I'm just telling you what happened. He goes, well, I'm calling her up right now. So he calls her up while I'm standing there. Meantime, this kid, he's a 6'2", pretty big kid. He looks like a grown-up, right?
Yeah.
He just happens to be 16-year-old. Anyway, he's handing me $10 to pay the pass, right?
Right.
But the ranger's not having it. He's like, so he calls up. He goes, yep, I just confirmed with her. That was the story. You were supposed to drop your trailer. And I said, I understand, but I have $10 here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to buy the pass. And he goes, I don't know why you got to be an a-hole. But he doesn't say
he
a-hole,
did,
right?
Nah.
He doesn't use that G version.
Yeah.
This
my kids are sitting there. Windows are open. Eyeballs are like white.
Oh,
you know?
My gosh.
And I go, hey, my kids are right here. And I'm kind of like trying to like tone it, the whisper down. I'm like, you're law enforcement. I'm teaching my kids to support the police and law enforcement. This is what you're representing to them. Can you not be, you know, cursing? And he goes, well, then stop being an a-hole, and he yells it at me.
Oh, my gosh.
And I go, okay.
Get his badge number, man.
I go, do you want me to insert the money in the envelope and put it in the box, or do you want me to hand it to you? And he goes, I'm serious. I'm trying everything I can not to give you a ticket right now. I'm like, it's a legit question. I don't know. Like, if I put it in this box, I don't know. Like, do you want me to hand it to you? And he's like, just put it in the box. So I put it in the box, go in. He watches me launch my boat. And that starts our fun-filled weekend for Memorial Day.
He had all the time in the world to give you such a hard day for
this
no reason.
This guy was looking for a reason to grind my face in the unmaintained parking lot of Senator's Wash.
Yeah.
had my kids not been there, he probably would have found that reason. But fortunately, it worked out in the end. So the thing is, I love police. I love law enforcement. I think the necessity there is great. We've seen what's happened with a defund the police movement. We've got to come back. We're at a break, but we're going to come back talking about government, how it's working for us compared to what the founding fathers intended, and taxation and all those fun things. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hanson is hosting an estate planning seminar June 21st at the Foothills Library at 2:30 p.m. Call 928-783-4575 or visit yuma.law today. Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hanson is hosting an estate planning seminar June 21st at the Foothills Library at 2:30 p.m. Call 928-783-4575 or visit yuma.law today.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. We talk about the government mainly and the services that they provide for us and in exchange for our tax dollars. We talk about how to avoid probate and how to minimize taxation by putting an estate plan in order so that your hard-earned assets can pass down to either your favorite charity or your family members, and your legacy can continue on with the least amount of government intervention. However, during life, most of us will encounter some government intervention, even if it doesn't have to do with taxes or passing down your legacy. And it's always been our mantra at this firm that the bigger the government, the smaller the freedom.
It's on a shirt.
It's on our shirt. And Martine's in charge of the marketing for that. So good job, Martine.
Love that shirt. It's so great.
Although I do have to give credit to Miranda Ochoa, who came up with the saying in the first place. We were looking through some sayings of the founding fathers, and I said, you know, we need a saying for this firm. And she came up with it like right off the top of her head. And I was like, yes, that's it.
That's the one.
So the bigger the government, the smaller the freedom is our motto. Do I hate government? Well, I won't ask it that directly. Thomas, do you hate government?
Sometimes.
So, Kylie, do you hate government? What do you think about government in general? Kylie, you are how old?
I am 21.
You're 21. So your interactions with the government are fairly minimal?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've had some interaction this year, you know, turning 21, and also...
Well, what does that mean?
Well, like, you know... Not any bad way.
She's at Senator's Wash without a pass.
I thought you'd have less interaction with the government now that you're legally 21.
Well, you know, I had to pay taxes for the first time. Gotcha. That was painful.
Okay.
Uncle Sam.
So... you are a millennial? What generation are you?
I was born in 2003.
What does that make her, Martine?
Gen Z.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, you're Gen Z. Martine, you're Gen Z?
Mm-hmm. I think I'm a millennial.
Loud and proud.
Okay.
I was going to say.
Yeah, very loud. The Gen Zs are very loud. I will give you that. So how do the Gen Zers feel about the government in general? We've got... Kylie, would you consider yourself on the political scale left of center, right of center? You don't have to tell me all your political ideology, but just say, which way do you lean?
Right.
Right of center. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna hit you with specific policy issues to see, you know, whether those fit right or left of center, because quite honestly, I think that anybody that's so party loyal, I think that's the downfall of our country. So anyway, I won't put you in and walk into that trap. But Martine, how about you?
I'm not really leaning to one specific side because, you know, like sometimes like you just have to admit that like one side just has a better point. Like during the whole Trump election and like especially during the pandemic, everybody was like, Trump's so bad and da da da. But like he did great for our businesses, and I had to be like, if like someone else was in the office, it would have just like shut down everything, and like God knows how many other businesses would have closed. Like that wasn't just mom and pop shops. Like everything probably would have been shut down for like even till now.
Yeah,
that is a wonderful I think if more people had that opinion about right and left and policies in general, it's like, I am not a Republican. I am not a Democrat. I'm an American. Tell me a policy. I'll tell you whether or not I agree with it. That this tribal loyalty to one side or the other, I think, is really self-defeating. Cody, how about you?
I mean, I've been a Republican since I was sixth grade.
So you are tribal loyal?
To a degree. I think I've kind of realized I'm probably more libertarian, but I want to be on a winning team. So you have to pick one side or the other.
Well, that ain't us lately.
Yeah, I know. But at the end of the day, I identify with the principles the Republicans originally stood for. Less government, less intrusion in your life. You know, leave me alone.
But when they actually get into power, they never practice that.
You know what? And we see that. And we see like 80% of the people are in the middle and they're just kind of left behind. And and the fringe on the sides are really dictating the conversation.
I think that this election cycle, the libertarians really missed a huge opportunity to come forward with a good candidate. Because if there was ever an opportunity in recent memory, this is it. Because we've got the extreme left with Biden, and we've got the extreme right with MAGA and Trump. And there are a lot of people that they don't like either of those camps. They want something rational and reasonable. And the libertarian view, the third party view, presents that. Most of the time when I hear the libertarian's policies, I agree with 90% of it. So the libertarian is typically looked at as the spoiler. Whatever party he leans a little bit more toward, that candidate generally is going to lose because he's going to pull, say, 3%, 2%, and that the margins are so thin between the two major parties that he's going to spoil that party's candidate's opportunity. And so I'll have to admit, in 2016, I did vote for, I think it's Ron Johnson. He was the, wasn't, is am I right?
The New Mexico governor?
Yes.
I believe so.
And so I voted for him, and because Trump was a little too radical as far as his lifestyle, and I had a hard time imagining a president where I could take a look at him and what was going on in his daily affairs and in his history and telling my kids, that's the guy that you want to aspire to become like. And so, and then there's Hillary Clinton, and she was the opposite end of the political spectrum. And so I voted for the libertarian at that point. But now we're even further divided. So I think the libertarians blew it. Sorry, I went off topic a little bit there.
That's fine. I think one of your points, I was watching a Netflix series. It's called The Crown. It's about
Queen Victoria.
Queen Elizabeth, right?
Oh, sorry.
Where's the
Elizabeth?
Yeah, Elizabeth II, right? Her, her rise and her early rule into the later seasons will go through the later parts of her life. But when I'm watching it, I think that's kind of an interesting system that solves some problems where you have this figurehead who's supposed to be the moral center of your country.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a prime minister who kind of just gets things done. But when people need a morale boost, the prime minister doesn't go, in the streets and hold parades. The queen does.
Because the prime minister is wholly political.
Right.
And the queen is, she's above the political
fray. Beyond politics. And I think that's how I view Donald Trump, is a prime minister-esque type of person. He's not somebody that I would emulate my life after, but he gets a lot of great things done. I agree with a lot of his policies. And when you watch what he does policy-wise versus what he says, a lot of the times I think he's usually pointed in the right direction. But I thought that's an interesting – I see some of the advantages of separating those two offices as moral and, utilitarian.
Yeah. So I'm going to play this clip about big government. It's by Dennis Prager. If you haven't listened to PragerU videos on YouTube, highly encourage you do, because they have these 5-minute clips that they condense a ton of information in 5 minutes that will bring you up to speed on anything from how government works to what's the difference between an Israeli and a Palestinian individual, and a bit about their history. Of course, it's not going to get into detail on that, but it'll lead you in the right direction. And I think they're spot on with their videos. Anyways, this is Dennis Prager.
The bigger the government, the smaller the citizen.
So I'm gonna tell you, he stole that from us. We said the bigger the government, the smaller the freedom.
Freedom, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he took a spin on that.
He bought a shirt.
It's okay, Dennis. It's okay.
He paraphrased it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're all right.
This is one of the most important realizations about society you will ever have. In fact, this understanding is the primary reason for America's unique success as both a free and affluent society. Everything gets smaller as the government gets bigger. Liberty gets smaller, individuality gets smaller, goodness gets smaller, and human character gets smaller. This is not a political point on behalf of a political party. It is simply an observable fact, and it's just common sense. Now, no one denies that government can and must do certain things. There's plenty for government to do. It's the government that must protect us from foreign attacks. That's why we have armed forces. It's the government that must protect us from criminals within our country. That's why we have police. Likewise, fire departments and courts are obviously necessary government institutions. And yes, when all else fails, private and religious-based charities, families, friends, then too the government must be there to provide a safety net of last resort. But it must always be of last resort. When government is the first resort, the first place citizens look when they have a problem, bad things happen. As government grows, almost everything else begins to disappear. The first thing that goes when government gets bigger than it needs to be is goodness. Yes, goodness. As the state gets bigger, people simply do less good for their fellow citizens. After all, why help others when the government will do it for you? This is the reason that, as noted by the international nonprofit organization Charities Aid Foundation and shown in study after study, Americans give more charity and volunteer more time to help others than do Europeans, not to mention just about everybody else in the world. From the beginning, Americans understood that government must be small, and therefore individuals must devote time and money to helping others, as well as non-governmental institutions of goodness. They have to be large and plentiful. Europeans, on the other hand, with their philosophy of big government, came to rely on the state to help their fellow citizens and even their own family members. The second thing that diminishes as the government grows is the character of many of its citizens. Just as taking care of others is a sign of moral character, so is taking care of oneself. Relying on others to take care of you when you are capable of taking care of yourself is just plain selfish and the very definition of irresponsible. And it gets worse. The more people come to rely on the state to take care of them, the more they begin to develop a sense of entitlement. A sense of entitlement is the belief that you do not owe others, but that others, in this case the state and your fellow citizens whose money supports the state, owe you. A sense of entitlement creates two other bad character traits, ingratitude and resentment. The more people expect to be given, the less grateful they will be for what they are given. And they get resentful when any of those entitlements are taken away. The third thing that bigger government diminishes is liberty. This should be obvious. The more government, the more rules, the less liberty. In much of Europe, for example, governments tell store owners how many hours they can keep their own stores open. That's right. In France and Germany, for example, you can't keep your own store open past a certain hour. And you can't open your store before a certain hour. And in the United States, the Federal Register was 2,620 pages long in 1936. By 2012, it contained 78,961 pages of rules and regulations. There are, however, some things big government always does increase: corruption, fraud, and theft. How could it not? Unless you think people are angels and that political power attracts angels, you know that a lot of people with almost unlimited power and with access to almost unlimited sums of money will abuse those powers. So for all these reasons, small government was the vision of the people who founded the United States of America. It is the major reason America has given more people more freedom and more opportunity to live a better life than any other country has.
I liked what he said at the very beginning, and that is the closer the relationship is between the individual that receives the assistance and the individual that gives it, the more gratitude there is. So let's take that on a personal level here. Let's say that, Martine, you are working to buy a new car. And you say, hey, Sean, can I work a little bit of overtime? Because you are the marketing person here. And I know marketing drives business, helps us get in more clients, and provides all the rest of the staff that work here more guaranteed employment. So I say, absolutely. Work a little bit of overtime, and I'm going to be paying you time and a half, but in return, my business is growing and my employees are given the opportunity to work. So that to me, although it's not charity, it's you willing to work and me willing to pay above what originally we agreed on, right? And just tell me, how does that feel?
Well, it's a good feeling because, you know, like I can work my 40 hours and then after that, working more for you, it's kind of more like I'll provide this service for you and in return you'll pay me a little bit more than normal. So it's like it's building a good relationship where it's like I'm doing him a favor by putting all in my effort and working extra to, you know, grow his business, and then in turn also give me more business to work, you know, like the more that your business grows, the more I have a secure job in place. And so it builds a good relationship between you and I, like the more just having that thing where it's like, I'll work for you, and you'll pay me a little bit more. And we just both grow in the end, like we both profit.
So when we know each other and we see where we're both working hard to achieve something that's reasonable and legitimate to realize the American dream, then it feels good to work together and to help each other out. But if you were to receive that from, let's say, the state government, and you were entitled to get, let's say, a stipend for the car instead of working a little bit extra and getting that time and a half, I would imagine that your gratitude would be diminished a bit because you don't have a personal relationship with the state government. You take it one step further, and it's the federal government, and the entitlement continues on, then not only is there not ingratitude or a diminishment of gratitude, but there becomes this stronger sense of I'm entitled to it, and if it's cut off, then I'm mad. And whoever cut it off, that politician needs to go, and whatever politician promises me more or continuation of entitlements, that politician's coming in. We're myopic in that sense and very short-sighted because we don't look at the long term. That money is not being produced by the government. It's being produced by you and your fellow citizens. So essentially, you're taking from your fellow citizens to receive those entitlements, giving the government more power. And the more power you give them, the less liberty you're going to have individually.
Yeah, I'd also like to add to that. I think the reason why people like feel less gratitude toward the government is because, you know, at their paycheck, they're like, oh, like the government already took money out of me. Like I already paid my dues for it. And then they just feel like that entitlement to demand more and more and more without considering like the small things that like that goes for, you know, like all like these smaller government programs that they partake in, you know, like that you just help your community, and they don't see that because they may not even receive it. They're just like, well, I pay them this, so I should get this in return. Like they just don't consider everything else that goes into it as to paying that, you know, like those part on your taxes.
Okay, and that'll bring us into our next segment. We're going to take a break here. We're going to come back. This is Life, Death, and Law. We're going to define what that means and how much maybe the rich do need to pay to be paying their fair share.
Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hanson is hosting an estate planning seminar June 21st at the Foothills Library at 2:30 p.m. Call 928-783-5000 4575 or visit yuma.law today.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
He's a smart guy, his raw IQ points, Pete Buttigieg, but apparently has no common sense at all. So he is face-planted on Face the Nation when he is asked a simple question, which is the Biden administration has allocated literally hundreds of billions of dollars to do things like build green charging stations across the country. You guys have built like seven of them. What happened?
The Federal Highway Administration says only seven or eight charging stations have been produced with a $7.5 billion investment that taxpayers made back in 2021. Why isn't that happening more quickly?
So the president's goal is to have 500,000 chargers up by the end of this decade. Now, in order to do a charger, it's more than just plunking a small device into the ground. There's utility work, and this is also really a new category of federal investment. But we've been working with each of the 50 states. Every one of them is getting formula dollars to do this work,
engaging them, though?
In the first handful, again, by 2030, 500,000 chargers. And the very first handful of chargers are now already being physically built.
Okay, so you built seven. I mean, dude, seven? Really? I mean, I understand you took a long paternity leave and all, but seven?
Okay, so if you missed the name is Pete Buttigieg. He's the Secretary of Transportation. Everybody knows this guy's name. He's like, he was one of the heir apparents for president. And he's the only Secretary of Transportation that I can think of that I actually know his name off the top of my head. Can you think of anybody else's name that's the Secretary of Transportation?
Nope.
No. And the reason why is because it's so dang terrible. Because he shows up to East Palestine when that train wreck occurred a week afterwards. And the bridges that are failing and everything that's going on, the transportation when the ships were all stuck at port. And we couldn't get any supply chain moving during the COVID era. Things wouldn't work. And so we hear his name over and over again. And that's not, it's not a great thing that we know his name so well as the Secretary of Transportation. But he's averaging $1 billion per station. And he's got the power of the federal government behind him. He's the one that makes the regulations. This is the thing that I really want to focus on. Do you know how many Tesla stations there are?
No.
There's 25,000 Tesla stations. 25,000, and those are created by a private company that's not taking from you and I by force, taxation, and they have to go through all the government regulation. And I'll tell you what, Joe Biden, Biden administration, and Elon Musk, they're not cozy, right? So he's not getting any favors. Pete Buttigieg gets any favor he wants when it comes to regulation, but his excuse for in 3 years getting seven stations for $7 billion is it's complicated. There's a lot of regulation. It's mind-blowing how inefficient the government could be. I can't. That example just happened recently, and I can't think of a more on-point example of how the government can take your money and waste it. So why is that? Perhaps because most people that are running the government haven't actually had to run a small business. Would you trust the people in government today? Most of the, you know, say even the Speaker of the House. Well, that's Mike Johnson. He ran a small business. Speaker of the Senate or the Senate President, Mitch McConnell, to run your small business. The guy has a hard time stringing a sentence together. We pick on Joe Biden a lot, but Mitch McConnell's there too, on the Republican side. And for those of us who have to actually make it work, and capitalism oftentimes is demonized as it's just a greedy method of running the economy where people own property and then they make others work to help them become richer. Capitalism, 95% of it, when you think about it, is focusing on how can I make everybody else like me and the product that I have? Because if they don't like the product that I have, and if they don't like the service and how I present it, they're not coming to me. I can't force anybody to come in and have me draft a will or a trust and get their affairs in order. I can't force them to come to my hamburger stand and buy a hamburger. I need to provide them a good tasting hamburger at a good price and that they won't get sick. I need to provide a good car that's going to be reliable, right? And then they're going to come back and it's not going to fall apart the next day.
You can't force them to go to Server Burger.
You can't, right. Server Burger is a great example. Why is Server Burger so darn successful? They're happy there. It seems like it. Whatever they've done with their management system, Chick-fil-A is another example of it. But there's a lot of great examples. I think Discount Tire, I love the way how that runs. Kylie, you want to put a plug for your family?
Yeah, Sean, thank you. My family has long been successfully running 3 car shops here in Yuma, and they're Accurate Automotive and Express Auto. There's 2 Accurate Automotives in town, and then Express Auto is out in the foothills. I can honestly say from firsthand experience that my parents and grandparents pride their business on providing a quality service and product as well. Similarly to Discount or Chick-fil-A, or especially this law firm.
Accurate Automotive has been around for how long?
Since 1969.
Here we went to the moon. There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah, yeah. They watched Neil Armstrong walk on the moon. So 1969, how much government subsidies have they received?
Not enough for us to live comfortably yet.
So when I say a government subsidy, I mean how much has the government paid to make sure that your business continues to thrive? How much has the government handed out to you? It's the opposite,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a negative amount.
Right. Your family's paid taxes for the privilege of actually operating that business, of employing individuals, of fixing cars, and making sure others have reliable mechanics. They've paid taxes for that. Now, I get it. The taxes are necessary for the police and national defense and things like that. But, boy, taxing the rich, your family would be considered the rich in this category because they own capital, they control a business, and so should we tax them more and make it a punishment for their ability to put together a workforce and expertise to help our cars continue to run? Does that make sense?
No, not at all. I mean, it should be the opposite. We shouldn't be punishing innovation. That's the opposite of what I think we founded this country for.
Yeah,
I
agree.
Mistaken.
Yeah, I agree. There's we're going to have to close up here, but one of the last points I want to make is that this idea has been tried over and over again. One of the most recent examples, it's the Soviet Union. They had the most brilliant economists that the world has ever known in the Soviet Union. They were not good enough to predict where capital and the market should go in that country. It was too big. It was too complex. So if the most brilliant economists can't do it, the odds are that subpar economists can't do it, which in my opinion is what we have running the government right now. The only thing that can do it is self-interest and people who want to make a dollar. They know where the money needs to go, and it flows exactly where it's supposed to. I think that's the overarching principle.
Yeah, so for those of you that think that climate change is an existential threat, you're entitled to that belief. I feel like it's more of a religion than it is a science. I have my own religion. I wouldn't impose it upon anybody else. I don't think you should impose your religion on you. I think you should practice principles that are consistent with your beliefs, but I don't think that you should force those on me. However, if you believe that, then let's create and innovate ways that we produce less carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And we've seen that putting billions of dollars towards a Green New Deal is not doing that. 7 charging stations for $7 billion is not an efficient way to reduce our carbon footprint. That's all the time that we have for today. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hanson is hosting an estate planning seminar June 21st at the Foothills Library at 2:30 p.m. Call 928-783-4575 or visit yuma.law today.